Irreverent. Entertaining. Cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza and Marvin Smith, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Well, good morning, good morning. Well, it's almost afternoon, but technically it's 11 o'clock, and so it will still be morning. Welcome to another edition of Answers for the Family. I'm your host, Marvin Smith. My show partner, Alan Cardoza, will not be with us today. He's back in the studio working on a featured film, and they're, you know, in the middle of some production work. So I'm here today and basically to host the show, and I'm excited. I woke up this morning. I just got to share this real quickly. I woke up this morning with an attitude of gratitude, just kind of just thinking back and looking how grateful I am just to be alive. And to be able to do a show like we're doing today called Answers for the Family, and to work with some of the wonderful folks who are doing great works out in the field. Each week, Answers for the Family will bring you guests that will inspire, educate, and in some cases, just outright entertain you, while bringing you answers and options to raising children today in our constantly changing future. We will address issues such as locating your runaway teen, family crisis intervention, building self-esteem, dealing with addictions, and so much more as these issues evolve around education in the 21st century. With each of us, Alan and myself, having over 30 years experience working with families in crisis, we've been fortunate to meet and work with some of the top professionals in the helping field and authors sharing valuable stories and helpful information who are working to keep your family mentally, physically, and spiritually sound, while helping to make this world a better place for all of us. We will continue to bring you some of these incredibly talented and caring people each week as we bring you Answers for the Family. Once again, I'm your host, Marvin Smith, and our guest today is Bill Engelson, who has worked on the front line as a government protection social worker and is an author of a new book, Like a Child to Home. Stay tuned as we take a quick commercial break.
Founded over 25 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis, West Shields specializes in resolving adolescent issues that negatively impact the family. From preteen to young adult, we are experienced and qualified to help. We offer solutions which include referrals to a network of top professionals internationally that we work very closely with in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, and psychiatry. Our in-home crisis intervention care program helps to stabilize families and bring effective resolution. We are supported by our licensed investigation company that enables us to offer legal and expert services for locating runaway teens and more. Our therapeutic transportation services help to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely provided transportation to specialized schools and programs with unmatched experience and success. Simply put, West Shield Adolescent Services is the best solution when your family is facing personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585 and let us help you.
Well, we are back. I'm your guest. Am I your guest or am I your host? I can be a guest as well as a host, but okay, I'm the host today. I could tell you I'm just excited and I'm just full of life today. So as I told you before, this show will sometimes just outright entertain you. Our guest today, Bill Engelson, worked in the child welfare arena, mostly as a frontline government protection social worker for more than 25 years after taking an early retirement opportunity. Shortly thereafter, Bill began an exhilarating journey as a program manager for an eccentric urban social service agency. That's interesting, an eccentric social service agency. The Lower Mainland Purpose Society, after a few years, decided he would really take up retirement and just enjoy life. In December 2003, he moved to Denman Island, It's a small island off the east coast of Vancouver, where life now has been enjoying the art of writing in a number of genres, community volunteering, and the art, in the arts of social services, and serving as a chairperson of a board of directors for Hornby and Denman, a community health care society which provides home support to seniors as well as youth and family outreach and counseling programs. He has written his first novel, Like a Child to Home, principally to depict the fictional form aspects of demanding child welfare work he's encountered and experienced and not often explored in literature. It's really interesting. The world of social welfare. Come on, a little tight-tongued here. Like a Child to Home is also meant to be a means of playing tribute to the amazing, resilient young people he's met along his journey, as well as to the hardworking adults who has shared that journey. Bill, welcome to Answers for the Family.
Hello, Marvin. How are you doing?
I'm great. How about yourself?
I'm doing well.
Okay. Well, I've, kind of looking at my notes here and some of the excerpts, I'm looking mm-hmm. forward to this interview. But before we go forward, I love this. Yep. Says the Eccentric Urban Social Service Agency.
I think you misread it. Eclectic, but it's close.
Okay.
Eccentric and eclectic. So they did a whole bunch of things. The organization had an independent school.
Okay.
For street kids. It had an AIDS program, counseling program, group homes, recovery homes for youth. You know, a whole range of street work, and in the Lower Mainland of British Columbia.
Okay.
Vancouver.
And that could be very eccentric.
It can be, yes.
Hey, Bill, thank you for being on the show with us today. And I'm excited. I mean, you've written your first novel, Like a Child mm-hmm. to Home. And I'd really like to get into that novel. And, if you don't mind, just I have some questions, and I'd love for you
sure.
to give your input.
Sure.
As it works? Okay. Well, my first question is this. Why did you write a novel about social work?
Well, when I was a social worker on the line, I was most people I encountered didn't really know what I did. They thought, oh, it must be tough, but they didn't really understand the work. I mean, I think that's maybe the same for a lot of professions. But social work, from my perspective, hadn't actually been portrayed very well on television or, in the movies. And, maybe I was being a bit presumptuous, but I thought I could write a book and show an aspect of it. Certainly not the whole ball of wax, but an aspect of social work, and perhaps educate people and honor the work.
Well, maybe as you go forward, I mean, because, a lot of times as the general population, we hear things, we hear words, we think we may know, but like you said, sometimes that the way things are depicted in television is not always the truth or the reality, and it can mm-hmm. either glorify or bring demise. And so maybe, if you don't mind, maybe what is a social worker? I mean, what is that? Maybe you can kind of just give some insight to what that entails.
Well, certainly within the book, and what I was trying to show was that in my role as a child protection social worker, and particularly in the later days when I worked with older teens
okay.
who mostly were in the care of the state or were in between, they'd been kicked out of home or ran away from home and they were looking for something and they were needy in some way, needing something. The state, the government, assumed a bit of responsibility, different levels of responsibility for these young people, and we thus became a sort of parent. I was going to originally call my book Next of Kin, which unfortunately has been used over and over again, so it wasn't a very exciting title. But the state becomes like a relative of some sort, and we assume responsibilities, and I was trying to show some of the day-to-day responsibilities of just being a guardian for these kids, a range of them, and many of whom didn't necessarily appreciate
right.
the whole range of services we were trying to give them.
Yes. Well, I like too, you know, the comment about, you know, in your novel, you provide insight to how easy it is for these young people to transform their fears into aggression and isolation as they struggle with family, you know, distress, drugs, and violence. And I, as you're sharing or depicting, you know, the whole purpose of social services or social work is really trying to be that gap between and making sure these young people, young adults, these teens are placed in the right environment that they don't end up like this.
Yeah, and you know, many of them have been in different, all sorts of different situations. I mean, it's, you know, kids in care drift. At least that's traditionally been the case. You know, some are really lucky and find the perfect placement, but many don't. And it gets harder and harder for them to settle in. And at some point, they age out of care, and they've had all of these experiences of rejection, you know.
Right,
and
right.
So the system's responsibility is to try to stabilize them, try to find something that works for them. And not always easy at all.
Right.
Not always easy.
Yes. That's interesting. Well, the novel is mostly set in a two-week period in November of 2001. Why that time in particular?
Well, I was a bit of an inexperienced novelist, I suppose, and I thought I'd best approach the story I wanted to tell by just centering most of the activity within a manageable period of time. And for me, that was, personally, that was close to the end of my social work career.
Okay.
And as I mentioned in the book, it was just after 9/11, and I was on stress leave during 9/11. So I came back and had a short while to go, and then retired. So it just seemed to me it was a good time. It was a very pungent and potent time for me. And but I also mostly want to keep it finite, you know, just showing the job over a 2-week period. Yeah.
Well, and I think it's interesting, too, as you say, that it's a kind of a, you know, I always like to think of it a defining moment, you know, in one's life. And, you know, as I was kind of reading some of the excerpts and as I look at your background and, you know, have an opportunity for early retirement. And then as I read on, I go, do we really retire or do we go off to find things that we continue that, you know, that are passionate, that we're passionate about doing? And it seems like you didn't really retire. You just kind of kept moving forward.
Well, for sure. And that's just part of the nature of social work, I suppose. I mean, in my community, I try to volunteer. And, you know, we are a very small community. And we don't have a lot of direct services. So it's a lot of we have a few nonprofits. And I chair one large one that provides home support to, we have an increasingly elderly population where I am, you know, people like myself, retiring, getting older, and our needs become, you know, we need services, so I thought I'd best invest in supporting that because I'm going to need them someday, sooner rather than later, feeling like some days.
Yes, I understand. Well, you know, it's kind of interesting because I look at when I had an opportunity of having this brief career in the National Football League, and I had this early retirement. I couldn't go back to that field for whatever reason. I mean, they just, you know, they wouldn't. I became old very quick.
Mm. There may be a similarity between the physical pounding, I guess, that football players take, and perhaps the physical and emotional pounding that social workers take. It can be a tough job, and finding a way to survive in either of those kinds of systems, you know, is a real test.
Well, I think the big issue, too, is, you know, as I look at, you know, when I look at, you know, I'm being kind of punned and joking as we're moving forward, but to serious to the point where, you know, even when I look at my background involved with crisis intervention and, you know, having a background in behavioral sciences, and it's, you know, just a whole emotional aspect for me is working with a lot of teens in public education and these crisis situations. It's emotionally taxing. And if you're not careful, you find yourself so wrapped up and so wound up, you need help or, you know, we need help ourselves, you know, just to stay on task. And, you know, so I give a lot of credit. I give kudos to those who are in the helping fields because, you know, when you're out there doing the good work, it is very taxing. And I commend you of all the work that you have done and even what you're doing. And now to have this book, you know, in a novel form, Like a Child to Home, and to take that experience and to put it in a literary form.
Well, I appreciate that. I mean, self-care in the helping professions or anywhere, but certainly in the helping professions is something that is really encouraged, and it's not always possible to do it as well as one wants. You know, you want to extend the life of people doing work, and if possible, and so they need to look after themselves, and the system sort of needs to find a way to help them survive in the system, because certainly in child welfare, it was almost like an entry-level position. Although some people stayed for a long time, like myself, many just after a few years just needed to move on, you know,
right.
Climb the social work ladder into less or different demanding jobs. And so one of the problems with that, of course, is you lose expertise.
Yes.
You're constantly retraining people.
Yes,
and
true.
I think that's probably the situation in many quarters of child welfare.
And I look at, too, I mean, in parallel, when I think about education and teachers, which is the front line, I mean, day in and day out, and you know, these teachers do a phenomenal job in trying to educate our young people to move forward. And you're right. I mean, some stay there for a lifetime because they find a passion, it's their heart. And others stay there shortly and they move on up the ladder and go into administration. And they're so far removed from the front line. And I'm just a very passionate to the front line because when the rubber meets the road, that's where it's needed. And to me, the administration should be in support of those who are in the trenches. So, I commend you on being in the trenches and working and going down that road. Now, you know, you explain the rush of the job, you know, in your novel, in your book. What do you mean by that?
Well, the rush of the job. Well, there was just so much busyness, and it, you know, I never had a dull day, you know. I may have fooled myself occasionally to think I had a dull day, but I never had a dull day. I never had any chance to really catch my breath during the workday, which is okay. I mean, but you put a lot of energy into it. So the rush of the job was the range of things that you have to do, the constant demands, I mean, I I'm not distinguishing that necessarily from other kinds of jobs, but significant demands on the job and taking that home. And I mean,
yes.
For me, the pressure of, you know, even trying to get a good night's sleep sometimes when you've got all of those competing thoughts in your brain is problematic, and you need to kind of manage that. So for me, the rush of the job was the speed with which everything happened, and on the other hand, sometimes the legal processes were so slow that you had to manage the care of kids while they were waiting for some kind of legal resolution to their particular situation, and so there was rush, slow. I'm not sure if I'm explaining it all that well.
No, it's good, and I have a big smile on my face because, you know, when you understand the nature of the job and what, you know, a social worker and being in the trenches and what that really means is, and correct me if I'm wrong, like there's no day that's the same. It's like, you know, it's getting up and approaching this. I mean, even though there's similarity, we talk about caseloads and things of that nature. But when you start to talk about, you know, the activity, it's, you know, when you're dealing with human behavior and teams and systems, you know, for me, you know, sometimes the most slow part of it or depressing part is when you're dealing with the bureaucracy and, you know, you're talking about human lives are at stake, and as a help providers, we're trying to get resolution, and we want to manage and get these kids where they need to be. And unfortunately, is our hands are tied because of the legal process, which is, you know, the rush and then the slow. And being able to, manage that through the process. Would you agree?
Yeah, one of the experiences I had quite regularly, and it's other social workers that I worked with as well, is that we had a bunch of young people living independently, and they would almost invariably lose their housing. And so we were constantly trying to find new places for these kids to live, and I try to address that in my books. Some of these kids are really hard to place.
Right. And after a certain age, don't the kids term out of the system?
They do. They do. In British Columbia, and we have a bit of care available to kids after they age out at 19.
Okay.
And so some are eligible, some aren't, and generally it's underfunded, the services, but it's mostly to assist them to kind of go on to, you know, to college or some kind of training program. And sometimes they're ready and sometimes they're not. Quite frequently they aren't. We've actually got a really interesting situation in British Columbia now. One of our local universities is funding kids in care to attend college. And so they've got they just started last year, and they've got 38 kids in their program.
Oh, really? Okay.
Vancouver Island University. They're doing the job that the state should be doing, in my view. But
So sometimes it takes that outside entity to, you know, step up and look at the need. And but you're right. Yeah, I agree. I agree. You know, you tell a number of relatively condensed stories of young people, and you bring up this is it Wally Rose?
Yeah, Wally Rose, my main character. Yeah.
Okay. And then why them, and are they based on real youth?
Well, it was a fine line. I mean, I'm not the best writer in the world, so what I figured I had to do was I had to really kind of take some of the aspects of many of the kids I dealt with over the years and kind of weave them together and create composites and try to have tell us a set of stories that kind of give, you know, a general view of the kind of the kids who might, that I encountered certainly, who might need social work service. And there may be lots of other kids that I didn't touch base on, you know, that other social workers have to deal with. But so they were pretty much based, most of the kids were based on real kids. I certainly altered some of the aspects, hopefully to give them confidentiality. I hope I didn't do any of them an injustice. But I wanted to keep it relatively real.
Yes.
And
I think too, and particularly when you're writing in that particular genre, I mean, it's you're taking life experience, of years of work that you've done, and then to put that in a fictional format. I think if I was a writer, it would be based on maybe the characters would be fictional, but it would probably be based off non-fictional work. Or information that I have, and so which lines up to what you're sharing. So it's and which on the other hand makes it more real.
Well, that was the book actually may even be a little duller than it could have been because I didn't want to kind of it was tempting to go off and create some more elaborate scenarios, but I really wanted to try and capture as something as real as possible, and there's some limitations to that. It was suggested to me by a bookseller that I probably should have written a nonfiction book, like a memoir.
Okay.
But there was a lot more fun for me personally as a writer to do it in novel form. Try to keep it, but yet still keep it real.
Keep it real, right. Okay. You have secondary narrative that winds its way through the novel. Tell us a bit about Carla and her kids, Sky and Jordan.
Yeah. Well, the book, apart from telling the story of Wally Rose, also tries to tell a bit of the story of a composite family. In my career, I dealt with so many, typically some single moms, not always, but single moms and teens who were, doing what teens do, generally challenging parents, sometimes running away. And I just thought that as a way to move the book along, it would be helpful for me as a literary person to have a family that was in distress. And in this particular story, I cover a number of years, Carla as a child, as a teenager, as a young mom, and then trying to deal with her two children, one who's already run away and one who kind of early on in the book runs away, a young girl. And that kind of drives a lot of the action. And but I've met so many families who are like that, and requiring a bit of support from family or the state to help them kind of deal with what they were going through.
Right.
So it was. Yeah.
So now let me ask you this, Bill. What is the aspect when you think about social workers and, you know, the scenario I'm looking at, you know, Carla and now her kids, and you have this kind of recidivism or this repeated behavior that's, I call it generational. I mean, so all of a sudden now you have these kids that run away. Is it the responsibility of the social worker or the environment to now to go after these kids, or is the caseload? I mean, what does that look like?
Yeah. Well, I mean, a lot of kids are running away all the time. Some of them who are in care run away. I have a character in my book who ran away for 2 years and then gets returned, you know, much harder than, you know, and more tough than she was when she
initially
ran away.
Right.
So, but these kids, I mean, whether they care or not, they're constantly running away, and the stats, you know, accumulate. And I guess I was trying to, in the book, show that kids run away almost as a rite of passage in some cases. You know, it may not even be that things are so bad at home, but they run, they don't even know where they're running to.
Right.
And they can so easily get lost. It just doesn't take much at all. A lot don't.
Yes.
But some do. And I think the state has a responsibility more than it's ever proven to me that it does to look for these kids. But the manpower is just not there, the person power. You know, it's not a job that many people have time to do.
Have time, right.
You know, I mean, most communities have street workers, outreach workers, and they constantly try to find these kids and slowly draw them back in.
Right.
But, yeah.
And I know for West Shield, those are some of the things that we talk about, runaway teens that we get called into. And on, you know, on occasions are out looking for particular individuals to, you know, kind of wrangle them back into the fold. You know, it's and you know, then I always think about, you know, as you were growing up, you're talking about the terrible teens. Is if we can get through the terrible teens, they can become, you know, successful adults. And you know, there's a lot going on, you know, during those years of development, adolescence to teens, and you know, hormones and neurologically, there's a lot of factors. And you know, as the caring society, if we can, you know, wrap our arms, you know, with patience and love, and help navigate them through these years, I have seen some very successful results, and just amazed in the resiliency of kids given the opportunity.
Yeah. And I agree with you that many do make it through, you know, and they're lucky to have found just the right combination of adult support and something that appealed to them. But again, many, you know, there's some that just don't. And always trying to find ways to make whatever systems you have available to help kids, making them more accessible and practical, and that could be significantly challenging. And at one point, really quite costly too. So it's, you know, I think it's a sound investment, but it's not always seen that way.
Well, you know, Bill, it's about that time, and we're going to take a commercial break. But when we come back, we're going to go into this area of the unions and how the union plays a part in this, and is it a hindrance? Is it a, you know? So I want to talk about that once we come back.
For sure.
All right. So hold on.
Founded over 25 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis, West Shield specializes in resolving adolescent issues that negatively impact the family. From preteen to young adult, we are experienced and qualified to help. We offer solutions which include referrals to a network of top professionals internationally that we work very closely with in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, and psychiatry. Our in-home crisis intervention care program helps to stabilize families and bring effective resolution. We are supported by our licensed investigation company that enables us to offer legal and expert services for locating runaway teens and more. Our therapeutic transportation services help to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely provided transportation to specialized schools and programs with unmatched experience and success. Simply put, West Shield Adolescent Services is the best solution when your family is facing personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585 and let us help you.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza and Marvin Smith, right here on LA Talk Radio.
All right, Bill, we're back. Okay, unions. Okay. The unions play a brief but an interesting role in your novel, in society, period. So could you expand on that?
Well, this may not be an American experience so much as a Canadian experience, I don't know. But as a social worker working as a provincial civil servant, I belong to a union.
Okay.
BC Government Employees Union. And I found it to be a very powerful support during my time as a social worker. And one of the reasons is that, and I think probably this happens in many jurisdictions, terrible things happen on people's caseloads. Specifically, I guess, in British Columbia over the years, we've had a number of children die in care.
Ooh, okay.
For different reasons. And occasionally, the social worker is viewed, or a series of social workers are viewed as the guilty party because they didn't do enough. You know, they didn't do it right.
Right.
They left a child when they should have removed the child, or at least that's the perception. And again, one of the reasons I wanted to write the book was to show that it isn't a simple question all the time, that simply removing kids creates a whole new set of issues. And so there's a bit of dumb luck involved sometimes in how you service the needs of children, particularly younger ones, but all
right.
Kids. And the union, I found in many circumstances, really supports the worker. Now, some people may say that's not such a good thing, but I think in the world of social work, having a union on your side helps you do a better job and protects you so you can do more work,
right?
Hopefully,
right.
Good work.
So, which I think you as you're sharing that you're right. It, you know, from that situation or from that standpoint, because if I put myself in that position. You know, I want to be protected. I want to go out and do the good works, and I don't want to be. If my hands are tied, then I'm gonna be very marginal on what I try to get done. Because at the end of the day, I'm gonna be thinking about protecting myself. You know, and I don't want to put myself in harm's way, especially if I have a family to support and all these other things. So all of a sudden now it becomes placated, and I'm not really doing my job to its efficiency because I'm too worried about myself. So having that union there in support. It sounds like what it does, it gives the social worker the ability to go out and be the best at what they're doing, knowing that there's this, I call it the halo, that's protecting them, that's some covering when they're doing a good job and not randomly, you know, being chosen as the bad guy or the bad person in the process, you know, God forbid something goes wrong. But, you know, when you're talking about human behavior, when you're talking about instances where there's you know, odds of probability and time, and it's just there's a lot of variables, and so, you know, to take those variables out, that becomes, you know, great. I would say a good situation for the social worker.
For the most part, yeah. I mean, there are still, you know, in any profession, there are people who perhaps shouldn't be in the profession that are and underperform. But for the most part, my experience was that there were you know, people really want to do their best, and that they needed a measure of protection so that they could take maybe the kind of professional risk that you sometimes need to take to affect a good outcome.
Right, right. And like you're saying, I mean, we would like to think that everybody that goes into a profession, they're there for all the right reasons, and they're going to do their job at 110%. But, you know, that's not always – as you said, in any profession, I always call them the outliers. There's always, you know, those few bad apples that sometimes want to make it bad – it makes it look bad for the core of the good.
We're still a bit of a strange country in British Columbia, anyways, that the workers who work for the government aren't required to be registered social workers in terms of, and being a registered social worker would mean that there's a regulatory body, which I belong to, the BC College of Social Workers, where, okay. You know, if you do something inappropriate, people can complain, and there's a complaint process, but that there isn't that expectation in British Columbia. We're kind of a backwater in that regard. For the most part, we're quite advanced, but that's always been a bugaboo with me anyways, about a failure of requiring some kind of professionalism.
Hey, that could be part of your next book of how, you know,
maybe
fixing that problem. Okay, I'm not going to give anything away. Okay.
Okay.
Okay. So, now, do you think you succeeded in telling the story you wanted in your novel?
Well, when I first started out, I wasn't as ambitious as I probably should have been, so I was going to write a short story. I was going to write each chapter a short story, and then I decided to become more ambitious, so I created a novel out of that. And I think I did what I wanted to do. I think I captured the bureaucracy to some extent. I mean, you never have it fully. I mean, it's just, you know, it's 250-odd pages or less,
right.
So it doesn't have everything. But I think it scans the system that I worked in. I think it shows some of the kids. I think I did a reasonable job, you know, even with my typos and my errors. And I know I shouldn't admit that, but there are a few. But, hey, I think I did.
Yes.
And,
well, you know, and adding, you know, giving you support here, you know, I think sometimes when you're so close to the work, you know, it's one of those things you can't see the forest despite the trees because you're amongst it. And that's, you know, there's going to be there's going to be those minor things. And that's why they have editors. And that's why they have these other individuals kind of circling around it, you know, to, you know, by the time it hits the marketplace, it's a polished product. So, but somebody has to come up with the creative side of that. And, you know, maybe one of these days you need to talk to my counterpart, Mr. Alan Cardoza, who's on the film side in the film world at this point, looking at taking stories and trying to create these featured films, in a fictional way.
That must be a challenge.
Yeah. Hey, he's in the middle of it, and it's daunting, and he loves it. It's because it's creative. So, and I just kind of sit back and marvel. So, interesting. Now, I'd have to say this. It's been very interesting, and just kind of hearing what you have done. What are you working on now? Anything to leak out here?
Yeah, no, I'm a... I was almost finished kind of a detective novel set in the 70s, and but then I decided I kind of like my character. It's probably ego. I don't know. I like Wally Rose, so I'm writing another book, a bit of a prequel, kind of going back to some of his formative years and trying to look at the system and having maybe a longer scan of time and maybe being a little bit more creative and inventive. And so I've got a title for it, Drawn Towards the Sun, which, anyway, so, but again, trying to show the system and maybe focusing on a few kids, a few storylines, and more comprehensive. So, kind of a challenge as a writer, but that's what I'm doing.
Okay.
And, enjoying every moment of it.
Now, if correct me if I'm wrong, and, you know, something about a poem, is it there in the works, or...
There's a group in the Bay Area who decided to celebrate the third anniversary of Fukushima, the horrible tsunami.
Yes, okay.
And They're coming out with a worldwide book on poetry, but various poets from around the world kind of honoring that anniversary of that horrible event. So they'll have one of my poems in called Japandemonium. It was kind of a spoken word piece that I wrote very quickly, shortly after the event, for a local open stage thing on my little island. So it'll be out soon. I haven't heard lately, but they had the proofs all done recently, I think.
Would you like to share that on the air right now, or?
What, the poem?
Yeah. Hey, this
is, I don't think so. Not today.
Okay,
it's on YouTube. I've videoed it on YouTube. So if anybody wants to go on YouTube and video my, put in my name, Bill Engelson, it should come up.
Okay, spoken word. Okay.
My nephew.
Hey, I'm putting you on the spot here, Bill. Say, hey, step up.
Yeah.
That's good. That's good. So, is there anything else? I mean, you know, in reference to the book that or your novel that we didn't cover that you may want to share at this point in time?
Well, I hope people take a chance to take a look at it, maybe download it. It's available, you know, as an ebook, so it's relatively inexpensive. And, you know, I'm hoping that people find that if they do read the book, that that they think it's a reasonable portrayal of what they imagine social work is. And for professionals, if they read it, hopefully I haven't offended them. And hopefully I've treated people with respect in the book. You know, I mean, there are tough stories in social work. And so I guess I was somewhat selective in the ones I told.
Right.
But I think it's readable. And I wrote it to some extent as if, I like detective fiction a lot. And I sort of, the voice of my character, Wally Rose, is basically the voice of somebody who's reflecting on what he's doing and talking about it, and there's a bit of humor in it, you know. It's
right.
Sometimes dark, but there is some humor. I hope there's some humor in that.
Well, and then here's my, I have a question, and as we're winding down here, because we're looking at about another 7 minutes on air, and I want to get to some of the listener questions, but in looking at your novel, and now, in retrospect, looking at what you have in print, what would you want the reader ultimately to walk away with?
I guess what I ultimately want is for people to, aside from appreciating the hard work of social work and child protection, to have a great deal of empathy for the young people who are, you know, unwillingly, in most cases, involved in a system, you know, in a kind of a strange system.
Right.
You know.
Yes.
If they ever watched the show Orange, you know, Is the New Black, I forget the title exactly. I mean, it's about women in prison, but
it's
the child welfare system has an element of that. I mean, kids are drawn into it unwillingly, you know, even if they appreciate that it's benefiting them, and it's, they need some tolerance and appreciation, and ultimately I think more and more services to become fuller human beings. I mean, they're a lot of them are really strong kids, you know. You mentioned resilient. I think kids are resilient, and to survive in any foreign system, they need to have their resilience reinforced.
Right. And I think the other thing is you know, just adding to what you just shared, a lot of times these young people, they're put in circumstances that it was not to their own doing, because then you start to look at another layer on this about parenting, which is a whole other topic. Mm-hmm. And so kids sometimes, they're brought in these situations, and unfortunately they don't have control. So then they have to make do, and they have to navigate the process. And it's, you know, without that patient and that loving care of some adult or within a system, it's tough. It is really tough. So anytime I see kids that make it through that system and turn around and do things that are great in our society and giving back, you know, I say that's one that, you know, somewhere there are some loving adults that help them through the process. So, like I say, once again, I want to commend you on all the work that you have done and what you're doing now in literary form, and even as you continue to volunteer in the community and do the things you're doing, just because as you share, I could tell in your heart, and I could tell in sometime in your depiction of your words, that the compassion is there, because you wouldn't have done it as long as you did. So once again, thank you for your service. I want to get to a couple of listener questions. I was a foster child, and for the first 6 years of my life, my first family I was placed with didn't have much to care for me, or the other three children they had taken into their home. They seemed more interested in the income they received. Thankfully, I was placed in a new home that was loving and wonderful. With their encouragement, I went to college, and now I have a family of my own, three of which are foster children. It was a social worker who took over my case that made this happen for me, and to which I will always be eternally grateful. So that's one of those stories. That's one of those that we can all kind of tilt our hat to.
And the system always trying to, I mean, there's a short, you know, I don't know about the States, but certainly up here, there's always been a shortage of resources. So you use what you have, and some of them are experienced and caring, and some of them are not, and some of them want money. And I mean, money's a factor because in raising kids, and the foster system, and certainly, you know, there's the money is an aspect of it. As with, for raising kids, it costs money.
Right.
So, but finding the right match is often very difficult, and so a very fortunate young person to find, even after 6 years of not being in the right place, to find a safe haven. That's wonderful.
Right, and I personally have seen both sides of the equation, where you see the good match, and then I find out, you know, where kids have been taken out of environments where it was about the money. So, you know, like you said, we try to do the best that we can as we continue on. Now our next listener question, or it's not really a question, but a statement. It's nice to see this topic on your show. As a caseworker for 20 years, I believe a book like this is long overdue. I look forward to buying it and getting your guest perspective on many good workers trying hard work to help children in a very restricted system with a shortage of good foster families.
Yeah.
So
good.
Yes.
So I'm honored. In.
Yes. Yes. So I know we've got a couple minutes left. Is there any information, a website?
I do have a website and a little blog.
Okay.
www.englesson.net, and I occasionally post things about child welfare, and I sometimes boring stuff about the writing, the art of writing. So, you know, I try to make it interesting, but I have yet to develop a little ability to write about how wonderful it is to write, but I keep working at it. I do have a little website, and people can find my book through that.
Okay.
And a few other poems and other writings if they're tempted.
So can you repeat that website one more time?
www.engelson.net, and Engelson is Englesson. And I should point out that even when I retired, my employer, the government, misspelled my last name, so I can appreciate how difficult it is.
Yes. Well, Bill, we want to thank you for your time today, and as I would say, just want to commend you for the work that you're doing, that you have done, and kudos and keep up the great work. We need more people like you in this world, making it a better place for all of us. Thank you.
Well, thank you for the opportunity. Take care.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Founded over 25 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis, West Shield specializes in resolving adolescent issues that impact the family. From preteen to young adult, we are experienced and qualified to help. We offer solutions which include referrals to a network of top professionals internationally that we work very closely with in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, and psychiatry. Our in-home crisis intervention care program helps to stabilize families and bring effective resolution. We are supported by our licensed investigation company that enables us to offer legal and expert services for locating runaway teens and more. Our therapeutic transportation services help to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely provided transportation to specialized schools and programs with unmatched experience and success. Simply put, West Shield Adolescent Services is the best solution when your family is facing personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585 and let us help you.